I can be reached, Trevor@timeslikenow.com. Thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to speaking with you next time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is mixed media artist Bonnie Meltzer. Her show, Mending the Social Fabric, is on now at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education in Old Town, and it runs through Saturday, January 29th. Thanks very much for coming back on Art Focus, Bonnie.
My pleasure. It's always been fun to come and visit with you.
I had you on a show years ago. You talked about coal trains running through your neighborhood, Kenton.
We stopped six coal terminals from being on the Oregon and Washington coast. And I did a whole show about that. So making artwork about political issues and cultural issues and social issues is right up my street.
This show, Mending the Social Fabric, it has a very kind of post-Trump feel. Well, it says on the wall, the events of the last few years, but the physical object is a huge white parachute, and on it are multiple handkerchiefs with sayings embroidered on them, such as knit dreamers into citizens, and many colors of threads woven together create a beautiful rainbow. There are many of these, and then there are embroidery hoops in the fabric where you cut the fabric. People come in, the general public, at a certain time, and then they patch it up, they sew it, they mend the fabric. So this is a giant metaphor hanging from the ceiling. There are two other things, a sort of blue and red prayer flags on one wall, that kind of thing, and then there's a giant map of America pincushion. So just take us to the concepts. What is the founding idea of this work?
On January 20th, 2017, everybody had their television on, their radio on. Everybody was talking about the unraveling of the social fabric. And I got this idea. I was going to do some artworks about unraveling, but at the same time, I was thinking about all the pieces I wanted to do, and I wanted to do a giant piece on mending the social fabric. So the origins of the idea is 2017.
The day Trump was inaugurated,
yes.
Who was saying things were unraveling that soon?
Everybody on OPB. Joe Biden had given a speech a few days later, and he had used the word mending the social fabric, I think, three times, which surprised me. So I started keeping a database of every time I heard it. I even got things off of Stephen Colbert, you know, at night, and I'd have to get out of bed and write down what Cory Booker said about my justice and your justice are woven together. So even things that are supposed to be comedic, people are using those phrases. And so all the references on the handkerchiefs are textile-based. All you have to do is think of the internet. The internet is a fabric, a thread in Twitter. It's a very long line of the same thought, all threaded together. So I love playing with words. I'm very excited about the fact that I was born with an interest in both words and vision and how people see things.
When did this come about, then, the idea of the torn parachute that everyone needs to pitch in and fix?
The parachute wasn't part of the original idea, but as all artists, anybody who starts a project, you think, how am I going to do that? How do I put it together? What materials do I use? And so I was thinking of all these ways of how do you get a big roll of fabric on a wall and pull it down? How many people can you sit at a time? And, of course, that was pre-pandemic where I wasn't thinking of having five people come and sew at a time. I was thinking of 10 or 15 or maybe 20 people at a time. And then a friend called me up and said, Bonnie, my father-in-law has a big parachute in his barn. It has been there since he bought it in the 60s, and he wants to get rid of it. Do you want it? She said, oh, I already told him you did, so he's mailing it. So we met. I put it in the back of my car, and I was going, what stinks in this car? What is that smell? Well, it was parachute. It had been in a barn since 1945.
Was it out on display or just in a box?
It was in a box, and it was probably the same box. So I took it, I called a friend and said, Jacqueline, do you want to spend some time with me at the laundromat? So we took this giant thing. It has a diameter of 20 feet. And we went to the laundromat because they have giant machines for rugs and blankets and quilts. And as we watched it go around and around, the water was yuckier and yuckier and yuckier. And I'd had a couple of extra rinses. Not one rip out of washing and spinning and then putting it in the dryer.
So you hung it from the ceiling and put some rips in it, and now people come in and sew it up?
That's in a nutshell. I hung it from the ceiling, which was no bean feet. This was made for this room. It's not a permanent exhibition, but it was made to be exhibited here. I had to work with the room, unbeknownst to everybody. This ceiling has a lot of stuff on top of it. So we couldn't make as many holes as we kind of needed. So we made do and redesigned how it was going to be hung. And actually, it turns out for the better. And it really has helped fit all the symbolism.
You have a red rope with a huge kind of fake silver needle. It's like 4 feet long, which is threaded and stuck on the wall. And then the red rope goes over to the other wall with a ball. And the whole thing is hanging the parachute. And there are some red chains as well to splay it out. So it kind of looks like a giant wedding dress as well.
I like that idea. People bring to it. I was not thinking of wedding dress. A wedding dress is a symbol of positiveness. Nobody says on their wedding day, oh, gee, if I don't like this guy, I think I'll get a divorce in a year. We think our weddings, this is a new life, a new positive thing. So it fits that this looks like a wedding dress. Now, I didn't like when we did some testing. Luckily, the museum let us, while the museum was closed, they let us come in here and test out all the different ways of hanging this, because I had no idea how it was going to be hung. But then I posted, people said, oh, it looks like a ghost. And I went, oh, no, ghost didn't fit. Angel didn't fit. Wedding dress fits. But I like people have come up with all kinds of other symbolism that I hadn't thought of. And I like that idea. People bring themselves to an artwork. I wanted people to have hope. I wanted people to know that they could be part of something. And symbolically, you make a few stitches, and it doesn't matter if you make a little or a lot. That's part of the thing. And then a man came in and said, well, some of these don't look finished. I said, well, somebody else is going to come and work on them, just like your daughter is over on the other side. And he said, you know, that fits with Jewish thought. And he told me a quote, and it was by a first century rabbi who said, it is not your duty to finish the work, but you can't ignore it either. So I think that's a perfect metaphor for this piece. It doesn't matter how much you do. You have to have sometimes a big concept, but you can do a little bit here and a little bit there. When I first started, I was going to give people lots of direction and do it like a workshop. And then I thought, you know, it really fits better if I give people a few little tips. They work on it. They're all different. And I think some people think there's only one way to solve a problem, and this piece shows that there are many, many ways to solve a problem.
So you supply mostly pieces of red and blue fabric. I mean, there's a lot of pink and purple and different kinds of blue.
Another thing, when you're doing a big project, you have to make some restrictions on yourself. And red, white, and blue seemed to be a logical one. And I added purple besides liking the color, it is the mixture of red and blue. We're talking about unity, the mixture of red and blue moving together.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is mixed media artist Bonnie Meltzer. Her show, Mending the Social Fabric, is on now at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education through Saturday, January 29th. What does the expression Tikkun Olam mean?
It means repair the world, which is just another way of saying mending the social fabric. I have a lot of this American imagery in here because to repair the world, you have to start with this country. I like that. I've always related to that as part of Judaism, is that whole idea of social practice, the whole idea of social engagement.
Is Tikkun Olam, a religious phrase? What's the context most people would hear it?
I guess it is religious. There's a lot in Judaism that's commentary, there's even a magazine called Tikkun, which is a magazine about social justice and using a Jewish framework, and it's edited, but the publisher is Michael Lerner, who is a very socially active rabbi.
You get people in, maybe, five at a time, little sewing bees kind of thing?
Sewing bee is exactly the right word, mending bee. There's two ways you can do it. I have open days, which will be on the Jewish Museum website, and I just come and spend the day here, and people pop up. And then you also can go to the site, find my email, and make an appointment. Say, I have 3 people coming, I have 5 people, and I will come. Until January, I will be here as much as I can. The museum is open Wednesday through Saturday. It is open from 11 to 4. I usually like to start at 11:30. And sometimes people stay a half an hour. Sometimes they stay 2.5 hours or 3 hours. And people come back. They love it. It's very calming.
What do they say they're getting out of it? Because clearly they're not mending the social fabric. They're mending some fabric socially.
It's very calming. People who come in groups, they haven't seen their friends in a long time. And I have to say, I worked on this in 2019. I started this in 2019, before the pandemic. And so I had to change some of the design and some of the things I was working on. It was supposed to open October 2020, and it opened October 2021. You couldn't ignore the pandemic. You couldn't ignore all the affronts to justice. So I had to kind of fine-tune, and even though I had an extra year to work on, I was still working till the last minute because the whole concept got bigger and bigger. And the people, they see the symbolism. They've been by themselves. They like the community spirit. It reminds them that maybe they should donate, help in some way, figure out what the small thing is that they can do. So I think that's what they get out of. And there's great conversations. I just love eavesdropping. I partake in many of them. But I hear these little snatchets of talking about books, talking about things in the news, talking about what they're doing to help.
Who said this? I stitch to amplify the unheard and help mend the tired hands and weary hearts.
Well, that was done by an artist, Alicia Dicker. And she's also a fiber artist, and she uses a lot of text in her work. And it was a riff on a Portland poet, Hazel Hall, who lived at the turn of the 20th century, I think on Northwest Gleason Street or Johnson Street, and was a sewer. That's how she made her living, but she was a poet and wrote about sewing. And so there are other poems on here, on one of the hankies, that Hazel Hall wrote. And Alicia Dicker also does things about America and social commentary. And so that was her riff on that poem.
The parachute, sort of like we said, stands up in a kind of a cone. People who are sewing, they can grab it and kind of pull it out towards them, like it's like an umbrella opening. And then it's all sitting on a huge American flag, just the star section of the American flag. It's the kind of flag you see outside a car dealership, right? Because the square section is gigantic.
We had to keep it off the floor. We didn't want people stepping on it. We didn't want people tripping on it. And we also wanted to define the space. So this is the stage that they have used when they had programs upstairs. It's 2 4x8 panels. So it's an 8x8 block. We had blocked out with fabric what the proper size was. An 8x8 seemed a really good size to give people enough room to walk around or sit around it. And my neighbor didn't know I was working on this or was looking for a big piece of fabric, which by 8x8 is bigger than a king-size quilt, which I was ready to buy or stitch pieces of fabric together. And my neighbor walked across the street with this piece of fabric. And it fit. It fit the design. It fit the design of the pin cushion that we have in the shape of the map. It helped bring a little color, because when you have a giant white piece in a white room, this made it so we didn't have to paint the room the color.
So your neighbor just had a section of the American flag?
She had pieces of one that she had used 30 years ago in Iowa, and she brought it with her, and she had used it for some other art display. And we kind of fine-tuned it.
Mm-hmm. You're allowed to do that in America? Cut the flag up?
I'm not saying. It's a piece of star fabric. This is KABU. Now, interestingly enough, some people on the left were horrified that I was using a symbol of American blah, blah, blah as a negative thing. And my point is, we as Americans have to define what the American flag is, and that hugging the American flag and kissing it is not really showing reverence. There's nothing irreverent about this piece. So I don't think the feds are going to come and arrest me.
On the back wall, you have what I said looked like prayer flags. They start in blue on the left, and there are 5 bands of them. They hang, and they end up being red on the right side. They are things like pieces of denim, swatches of embroidered or printed fabric. You know, they have images on like camels and chickens, elephants, the jewels, beads.
I got this idea because, remember, I started in 2019, and this piece was going to be about voting and immigration, because immigration was the hot fabric. Now, the president never said anything bad about you nice English people who came, but said terrible things about immigrants. And I come from immigrant parents, and many people in Portland. I know some people whose families have come a long time ago and some who came, you know, practically last week. So I started thinking in terms of these writing, and I came up with a sentence. Immigrants are a golden thread woven into the American tapestry. And then I said, Facebook, let's see if I can get some fabric. And I put a little post on and said, I'm looking for fabric from all over the world to signify that Americans are from everywhere and are everything. And I had many of these fabrics, but many of these fabrics came in the mail. Some were dropped off at my porch, and my husband one day said, who has a red truck? I said, I don't know. Well, they just dropped a big box off for you and ran away.
Did they explain what they were leaving, like each country
Sometimes.
Of origin?
Each fabric has a story of either how I got it, what it is, or the significance of it. I'll give you an example. I show a piece of tie-dyed fabric. It's purple, and it has a nice big circle in the middle. And I said, so where do you think this came from? And somebody said, Woodstock, because it's the typical kind of things that people wore in the 60s. but it happens to be an African fabric. But it could have been a Japanese fabric or a fabric from South America, because it's a technique that's used all over the world. It's like the wheel wasn't just invented by one person in one place.
The third wall has this kind of lumpy, felted map of America. It's a map and it's a flag, because the top left corner is blue. And then it's full of threads. And if you look closely, they're needles threaded, ready to go for the next bunch of sewers to repair the rips in the parachute. When did you come up with the pincushion idea?
I came up with the pincushion when my friend Mel Lee said, I'm going to come and sew on this, but I'm not threading any needles. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll thread the needles and I'll make a pincushion. And then the idea evolved, you know, and I might as well make the pincushion big, because I knew I needed a lot of needles. And I was buying them at 100 at a time. And it's also a good way to keep track of the needles.
Why don't people want to thread needles?
It's hard. The eye blinks, you know.
You mean hard. If you're at reading glasses age?
Well, or any age. We'll make you thread a needle later. You're looking, have you threaded a needle lately?
Yeah, but I need glasses.
Yes, right. And you're young compared to some of the visitors. But it is hard, and I didn't want people to spend all day threading the needle. I wanted them to have the creative spot. And a friend of mine came and he threaded a whole bunch of needles. I do it, sometimes we do it here. But now that there's pandemic times, what's the first thing people do when they thread a needle? You put the damn thread in your mouth. This is not something we should be doing today. So it turned out that it worked out really well. And so it's a very useful pincushion, but it really exemplifies, I like that, you know, it's the lumpy, it's not the clean, crisp, clear image of America. And all those are made up of recycled sweaters that I put in my washing machine on the sanitized cycle. And it made felt. Some of you have probably washed a sweater and shrunk it by accident. I did it on purpose. And then cut it up and sewed them together.
Is threading the needle a metaphor as well?
Of course. You hear it a lot when they talk about Congress. They can't even thread the needle. How can they pass the law? How can they get legislation through? And you just hear that as a metaphor all the time. It is a metaphor for something that's hard, is elemental and the beginning. It's the first step. So I like to think of that pincushion as we're ready. We're ready for fixing. We're ready for mending. Some of us anyway. Can I get back to the fabric pieces? So we have all this colorful fabric from all over the world, and I added some text because as time went on, I didn't want it to be just about immigrants. That was a lot of people, because I was counting the immigrants way back to 1620 or before. And then some people in Congress were talking about how black people were just immigrants in 1619. Well, we know that wasn't true. So I wanted to include them as golden threads as well. I want to include everybody. So I started with indigenous people, and that they have been a golden thread for 12,000 years. And as soon as I embroidered it, there was new evidence that it's 23,000 years, but I didn't change. I didn't pull out those stitches. And then I have black lives have been a golden thread woven into the American tapestry for 400 years. And there have been many black teenagers here, and we've had some very interesting discussions. And one that I use for this particular sentence is that just because some people don't know you're a golden thread doesn't mean you're not one. And the contributions of all these people have made America. People that are immigrants, people who are black, people who are indigenous, have all been golden threads. I mean, golden thread is another one of those metaphor that means something really wonderful and special.
What are you going to do next?
Well, I'm hoping to get this exhibited someplace else. I have a few places in mind. They don't know about it, that I want to pursue. I think there's room for it to be shown someplace that will just be beautiful, and you could look at it and you could read it, and many people spend quite a bit of time engaging with it. But there is room to expand and have that a solid band of color that goes around. All of those hoops can be totally full. I would like them to be full colored polka dots around here. Some of them just have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It will change in the next month.
And when it's no longer a social practice piece, so people aren't touching it and doing things anymore, how will its value change?
Well, I think it will be a symbol of its of this time, and I think we are not going to solve all the problems until this gets exhibited again, and it's not a participatory installation. Each of these parts could also be exhibited on their own. These handkerchiefs all come off because rather than sewing them on and worrying about cleaning them, they're all attached with tie tacks, you know, those funny little things that have a little clutch at the back. So they could come off. They could be hung like this, the prayer flags. They could be done that way, too, and be a whole exhibit. But it has a it's always going to be that there are going to be problems to solve. And it's always going to be that people have to take part. It's always going to be that you could do a little or a lot. And I want to urge people to do as much as they can. And sometimes if it's just a little bit, so be it. A little bit's better than nothing.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Bonnie Meltzer. Her show, Mending the Social Fabric, is on now through Saturday, January 29th at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education in Old Town. Thanks very much for coming back to KBOO, Bonnie.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Andy walking, Andy tired, Andy take a little snooze. Tie him up when he fast asleep, send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
La ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras. Emporté par la foule qui nous entraîne, écrasés l'un contre l'autre, nous ne formons qu'un seul corps. Et le flot sans effort nous pousse enchaîner l'un et l'autre, et nous laisse tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Entraînés par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse une folle farandole, nos deux mains restent soudées. Et parfois soulever nos deux corps enlacés s'envolent et retombent tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. joie qu'elle a poussée par son sourire me transperce et rejaillit au fond de moi. Mais soudain, je pousse un cri parmi les rires quand la foule vient l'arracher d'entre mes bras. Emportée par la foule qui nous traîne, nous entraîne, nous éloigne l'un de l'autre, je lutte et je me débat. Mais le son de ma voix s'étouffe dans le rire des autres, et je crie de douleur, de fureur et de rage, et je pleure. Et traînée par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse une folle farandole, je suis emportée au loin. Et je crispe mes poings maudissant la foule qui me vole, l'homme qu'elle m'avait donné que je n'ai jamais retrouvé.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 4 de enero del 2022. Los casos en el mundo del coronavirus se han disparado a un nuevo récord con más de 2,2 millones de casos confirmados reportados el lunes. En el sur de África, los casos se están disparando en Mozambique, donde el presidente Philippe Nyusi dijo el lunes que él y su esposa dieron positivo al coronavirus y se autoaislaron. El presidente de Botswana, Mokgesi Masisi, también entró en aislamiento el lunes después de una prueba positiva. Australia registró cerca de 50.000 casos diarios, un récord en un país que hasta hace poco había impedido